Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. This episode, I have my old friends Tony Kanon and Elio Castroneves. Myself and my colleague Robin Miller, we sat down with our two favorite Brazilians, the recent Phoenix IndyCar race. Been a busy time since then for them and for us. I've gone from the Phoenix IndyCar race to the Circuit of the Americas IMSA event, and now heading off to Indianapolis here tomorrow for the Grand Prix of Indy, and a fairly awesome month of May from there on for the 101st Indy 500. Great catching up with TK and Elio. They're celebrating their 20th anniversary here in America. I was fortunate to meet the two of them in the series they came into in Indy Lights in 96. I was working for one of their competitors, Genoa Racing. Start off talking about a case of mistaken identity on my part, walking up to Elio and calling him the wrong name. But anyways, we had sitting down with these two guys, it's guaranteed to be fun. Elio is a bit of a silent assassin, not the guy that says the big crazy things, but he builds up to it, throws in some great stuff towards the end of whatever he's talking about. Tony, a bit of the opposite, just bonks you right in the head straight away. A lot of fun, big personality, so they complement each other definitely. I was running a little bit behind, had a flight delay getting into Phoenix, so we're supposed to have about a half hour, a little over a half hour. Ended up being just over 20 minutes, and here in the very beginning, I put down my audio recorders. Elio was fascinated by the windscreen that I had on them, and was wanting to know why I had the little fuzzy attachments on top of the recorders. And then Tony jumps in and basically says, "Hey, shut up, let's get going. We have a hard exit that we have to meet here." So just jump straight in. You can tell Tony in particular gets a little bumpy. Those two drivers in their early 40s, definitely not keen on hearing the "when are you going to retire" type stuff. And I don't think we're actually saying that, but you can tell they've heard enough of it from other folks to not really want to hear it anymore. And then just spun through a lot of great stuff. Might have heard some of these stories from them. Might have caught part of it during the 20th anniversary celebration that they did at Phoenix the night before. But some of these stories still fresh, whether you've heard them or not. And a couple other gems that they let loose. Everything from riding a bicycle on the highway because you didn't know that you couldn't, to how they asked if they could move to a more familiar and Brazilian-esque climate, to their first experience on an oval, seeing cars on an oval. It's just great laughs with great friends, and so happy that they sat down with Robin and I for just an impromptu BS session. You can catch every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast when it comes out on iTunes. We have the Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page as well, so hopefully you're liking what you're hearing. There is going to be a ton more coming for the rest of the month. So off we go here with TK and Elio.
Why do you have this? To protect against the wind, right?
The sexiness could be causing...
Come on, let's try, because I got
a... All right, there you go.
I do have another one.
Me too.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So we
don't... You guys are in demand.
Jesus.
Yeah, like, we're... See?
That's
good to be famous sometimes.
Okay, so we're celebrating this year, obviously, 20th anniversary. The first time I met you was at Long Beach in 96. Even then, I was thinking about switching careers because I was working for the Genoa Lights team. You guys were a part of the cool Tasman team. I walked up to you and said, "Hey, Tony, I'd love to interview you sometime this weekend if you can." And you said to me, "I am Elio." It was very kind of robotic. And I realized, okay, A, I'm stupid, and B, I like this guy.
Still happens.
Yes.
Before we get to your guys coming up and upbringing and knowing each other and all that, I just think it's cool that we look back 20 years ago and you guys have been a part of North American racing culture for 20 years. Came in through Indy Lights. First question, you guys talked to Jose Luis de Palma at all? Because he was the third member of that team that everyone forgets about back in Lights days. But do you feel old knowing that you've been here for 20 years? And are you sick and tired of looking at me and Miller yet?
Well, I have not talked. I don't know if you did have talked to de Palma.
I talked to his son through Twitter.
Really?
Yeah.
How is he?
Remember his son?
Yeah, how
so is now he? He's 20-some and racing the Carreteras.
Oh, is that right? So I have not talked to de Palma, and I tell you what, I'm glad, and I think Tony can speak the same way. We're glad to be here in America, that they're able to accept our, you know, our hard work and able to recognize our, you know, going through the field and pushing to the limit. And today we're very I'm honored to be part of this, the American Racing, and I tell you what, I don't bit living, you know, Europe to come to America, because they say America is a land of opportunity, and it's right. When you work hard, you can achieve a lot. So, but I don't feel old at all. To answer your other question, I just feel that when they say that it's 20 years, it's great, a lot of experience, but I feel that I still have more to accomplish.
Yeah, I just don't understand when, you know, some people can call a 42-year-old old, you know, especially when we're still delivering. I mean, it's sometimes I think it's just because it's one of those things. One guy starts to talk about it and people just picked up from it, but I still believe that, you know, if I look at my great racing heroes, I know it was a different era, but at 42, they were at their prime. Yeah. You know, look at Mario, look at AJ, look at those guys at our age. So
yeah,
to me, I just, I don't think like that. I don't feel like that. I think even if you go back in that era, I think we're in much better shape than some of those guys were back then, because it was not the mentality. The cars, I think they're much dangerous to drive, yeah, but yeah, not as hard as far as yeah, how competitive they were. So I'm humbled and happy, and I hope we can continue doing this.
When you guys were living on Eric Bretzman's floor.
Couch.
But when you guys came over here and you spoke five words of English, I mean, you couldn't, I don't care how optimistic you were and how talented you guys were, you couldn't have imagined, I'm going to make a career, I'm going to win the Indy 500, I'm going to become a major star. I mean, that's what you wanted, but still.
Or did you, I mean, what did you guys think when you came over with that program in 96? Did you think this could be your career?
It was the goal. I mean, it was always the goal. I think the way we took it right away was, first of all, was the best opportunity we have gotten in our career. Yeah. So it was either this, when we were going to make this work, or not.
Yeah, true.
So we didn't have an option, really. So, and I don't think you can answer that too, but I don't think we had time to really like wish or dream. Yeah, we just had to work.
Yeah, your dream board hadn't been put up yet.
We had to learn how to speak English, and we had to be fast.
I remember when I signed with Bettenhouse shut down, and then I went with Hogan, and Hogan shut down. What I wanted, the only thing I wanted, it's like one contract that I don't need to be thinking about if next year I'm going to be racing or not. And when I signed with Team Penske, it was 3 years. I'm like, you gotta be kidding. 3 years? So that means I don't need to worry about sponsorship. But so that for me was.
You weren't afraid you were gonna shut down that team too, right? Sorry, Raj, I killed
your
team.
If you had managed to do that, that'd be a problem.
That's a different kind of Hall of Fame.
Yeah. So basically, I feel that when I signed that, I said, I can do this for a while, and hopefully, and 20 years later, I'm still doing it.
And to answer your question, I think it went by steps, because the unknown was so much bigger than any of our dreams at the time, that it was always like, we need to make it. And when we made it, it says, now we need to succeed to try to keep it there. Uh-huh. And I guess Eddie was, you know, he was a little bit ahead of me on that after 99. I think, you know, it kind of like, it took a twist, because I won the Lights Championship, he finished second. I signed with Steve later on. He signed with Bettenhausen. Steve was a more well-funded team than the other two teams he raced. So I was a little bit more established. I signed a three-year deal right away in 98. But then life took a big twist when Forsythe bought my team, and he got into one of the best teams in IndyCar. So, and then you started at, I think when he signed with Penske, I believe that's when he says, okay, now. And me, it's when I went to Mona, in which Morris had just left Ganassi at the time.
And what was that dynamic like behind the scenes between you guys? Because again, coming up together, going forward, found opportunities. Tony's kind of routed towards not the top team. You get into that top team. Is there any conversation of like, bide your time, you'll get there? Or are you asking, what's it like at Rogers?
I don't remember how much we talked. I remember that for me, I'm not gonna lie, I was happy for him, and in a way like, man, it's what we talked about. Only one of us were gonna make it. And eventually, every once in a while, it would go through my head that probably I was the guy that was not gonna be as successful because of where I was. And then, to me, the only thing that would cross my mind was like, if he was winning, I knew that how good I was, because we compare each other all the time. Yeah. That if I was in the same position or in as same team, similar position, I was gonna do well. So that was always my consolation as far as when I had much worse results, because obviously he was successful right away.
Yeah, for me it was just, unfortunately it was a very difficult situation when everything happens for me with and the Greg Moore passing, and I honestly didn't have any, my mind wasn't even focused in one thing. I just was, what do I do? I was very, it was a very disturbed time. So I wasn't thinking career-wise, I wasn't thinking, or Tony, I wasn't thinking, I was just like, what's going on? What's going to happen? And destiny brought me into this direction.
I mean, it changed in a second, right? Because I had, I had a contract already for the next 3 years, and the last race of the year. He was like, I'm out of job after this race.
Yes, he did.
Morris wanted it.
He did. Morris definitely, we talk about it, but that's what I'm saying. It was so many things happening during, and I, because of Bettenhausen, because of Hogan, I was already kind of, you know what, everybody's always saying, oh, he wants you, but bring a lot of money.
Well,
so yeah. I was kind of like, yeah. So everybody would come talk to me, I'm like, listen, I need to establish something that I don't need to thinking about sponsorship. And I remember actually vividly when Rahal came in July 1999 with a contract for 5 years.
Wow.
And I was like, one smile from me. I was like, so I showed to one of the attorneys that, in fact, it was Emerson attorneys back then, and they said, no, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that. And all of a sudden, I gave it away for Kenny Brack, a big opportunity.
I remember being at Hogan towards the end of that season, and I don't think anybody thought that you were going to be driving for a smaller team at the end of the year, but I don't know, Bobby put a big old contract in front of you. That's awesome.
That was cool.
Now tell the truth. First time you drove an oval, if you'd have thought your careers were going to be, some of your greatest moments were going to be on an oval, what were your first impressions of on an oval? And then
it was here. And then the first time we walked in, there was one of those crazy dudes with one of those, you know, the sprint cars.
Yeah.
And they lift the wheel up and turn one. I said, these people are freaking crazy. I'm not doing that. Is my Indy Lights going to lift the wheel like that?
I mean, do you walk up to the banking and go, what the hell is this?
No, it was like, we were together. And, yeah. And obviously, we didn't speak in English, so we spoke to each other a lot more than anybody else. I thought you guys were crazy.
Yeah, I remember.
Remember the cars are like,
yeah, no, I remember.
You know, the stagger tires, yeah. And you have to have your head like this. We need no anything.
Crazy. I remember Steve saying, okay, I said, man, I think it's pushing. I'm going to the corner, it's pushing, but I don't think I'm taking the advantage of the car because I'm not sure if I'm fast enough.
No, I said, we need to align this thing. So I lift my hand on the steering wheel, it pushes to the left.
So he's like, okay, I'll give him a crossway. Cross what?
Wade Jacker. Who is that? Is that a new guy?
It was really funny.
Yeah, I'm staggered.
What's his name? Jack? Wade Jack?
Bring him Wade Jack, all right.
Bring the Wade Jack. Yeah, if he's going to fix my problems.
So it was really, Phoenix was actually our first oval for sure, and it was a very interesting experience.
So to answer your question, no, I never, like, and I told that story last night, the first 2 years in Champ Car. I 98 and 99, every single mile over we did, I started dead last, and I didn't finish none of them, and I got told by one of my engineers that maybe ovals wasn't my thing.
Jeez.
And I only qualified Milwaukee because the two Eagles had some engine issues, because back then they were having huge problems and they blew up before qualifying. Otherwise, it would have beaten me and I wouldn't have started the race.
I tell you what, but all seriousness, the 900 horsepower, every time we're going to the oval, it was super scary.
These kids have no idea.
I mean,
tell us about bravery, because that was one of my questions. That you guys I look at you guys as just such prized people to have been part of the kart era.
Yep.
And, you know, we're happy to see Joseph Newgarden doing so well. And you go, son, you got 500 and some horsepower on an oval. You know,
it was absolutely incredible. I mean, when we, next race, what's next race? It's Milwaukee. I was like, Holy crap, man. This is going to be a tough one.
No, what about Fontaine?
Fontaine.
230 miles an hour speed average. I'm like,
Nazareth, it was always a very... Any place that you're going short ovals with 900 horsepower.
With downshift twice. With downshift. Speeding off the corner. Remember Chicago?
You're afraid to touch the throttle. And it's interesting. I remember one day Christian Fittipaldi told me, I said, hey, is this like Formula One and things like that? I said, no, Formula One, it's quick from a short period of time. But this, it's every time you jump in the car, it's you never get used to it. It's always fast. And that I remember, like, okay, it's not only me. It's not only because I'm a rookie, but it's the real
deal. But bravery, Marshall, I don't know. I think that comes with no choice. We had no choice.
Yeah. You got to learn.
Yeah, but we had no choice. We had to learn because if we didn't, we were going to go home.
Your team owner would make the choice for you.
Oh, big time.
You got to learn.
Big time. So.
Back then, there was no, people wouldn't talk about you. Are you flat out in the oval? There was not even.
No, but hold on. First time I came to IRL back then.
No, I'm talking about
you. I know, but remember when we made the switch that people say, hey, you got to go all the way through the bottom and keep the bottom. Like, that's not going to work.
That's like, this is ridiculous.
You never run on the white line. You know, you used in Michigan.
Yeah.
At 230 miles an hour speed average, at 242 that you had the top speed, you go all the way up,
you
all the way down, and pray that you still have track left when you exit the corner.
It is true. So those are the things I remember. It changed a lot, but and that's part of learning how to be brave and learning how to listen to your butt, because that's the one that's saying, okay, if it's thinking it's loose, you better make a change. You don't.
Yeah, I remember Steve saying that to us. Remember, respect the racetrack, and if you think it's loose, come in.
Yeah.
And then I think to add to that, to finish your question, between the two of us, we always said we had to be ready for the next opportunity because it might hadn't been the only one. You know, it started with the Indy Lights test that he had his ribs broken, and he hadn't shown Steve that he was only like 2 or 3 tenths out of my fastest lap with only 3 laps in because that's all he could sustain the pain.
Wow.
He wouldn't get the job. But then somebody, like he said, somebody would get hurt and we had to replace somebody, which didn't happen. But we had to be ready and fast. We didn't have the luxury to say, you're going to learn. No worries. You have a year to take your time. It was never like that. We need to, especially running for small teams, that was it.
Yeah.
You need to do it. You need to finish in the top three. We need to try to win a race. You know, it wasn't like, you can learn how to run in Michigan. We'll be fine. Next year, we'll come back.
So we got just a couple minutes before we got to let you guys go. A couple quick questions to ask. So some famous stories about when you guys first came over, living in Ohio, not a lot of money, having to learn about American cuisine.
It was a lot more fun back then.
So I want to know, what American foods did you guys love when you first came over, and what things did you see or try where you said, these people are savages, I wouldn't feed that to my dog?
We didn't really think like that, did we? I remember Adel tried to cook a chicken.
Yeah, that was probably
then when we actually went to, like, he cooked the chicken for 3 hours and we went to cut the chicken screamed, it was still alive.
That was funny. That was a disaster. We went actually to the McDonald's right after.
Yeah, we used to eat McDonald's a lot, to be honest. And back then, you were so young that we honestly, Marshall, I think one thing that, I can tell you for me, that was really like impressed, which I kind of like it now, but I said, these people are crazy, is like putting pineapple in a pizza. That doesn't happen back home. I'm like, what? You don't eat fruit with pizza.
Didn't you guys practice saying, I'd like a cheeseburger when you first got, didn't you have a couple phrases that
he spoke better English than I did, barely.
Well, I speak, but I couldn't understand.
Yeah, and it was like, he spoke English, but people say, hey, what did he say? I don't know.
I don't know.
Hold on, let me get my paper.
To me now.
Where is the bathroom? I am hungry.
Are you single?
No. Do you want to have sex?
Now we're going downhill.
Right now.
I don't think we had anything that we thought you guys are really crazy. It was just a different culture.
That's come over time.
When people thought Eddie was crazy when he took his bicycle in the highway.
I know.
He thought it was okay to go.
It was
we lived one exit from the shop. Obviously, you can go to
the roads, the internal roads.
You thought people were friendly because they're honking at you.
They were honking.
The police stopped.
They didn't stop. But when I arrived, the guy said, "Well, so what route you took?" And I was like, "I took the
270.
Was it 270? 270. They're like, "Are you sure?"
It was a mile. You know, it's one exit from the other, but still, no helmet, nothing.
No,
just on the interstate.
No, yeah, you're right. It was. It was. I realized. I said, but I don't know how to go back then because that was the only route I knew.
They took you back.
No, they kind of like told me, show me a map.
Remember when Scott, we had a PR guy that he had a pickup truck and we hadn't seen a lot of snow because, you know, he was in England, I was in Italy. But every time we went back home in December, remember he took us around and he tried to do a spin around and we hit the fence. Remember that? That truck? Remember the Australian guy, the Scott? You were
seeing, I remember Scott.
We're all in the front seat together, no seat belts. And he did like a 360 and we hit a pole. And he was like, oh, mate. And we're like, whoa! Don't tell Steve.
I tell you what, there was this snow was the weather in Columbus was
terrible,
very difficult.
So good that you live in Florida.
That's thanks to Elio, because Elio had a sponsor at the time that had a place in Miami. So in between races, he would flee to Miami, and I'm miserable in Columbus. And he's like, Tony, you gotta come to Miami. I never had been to Miami. So awesome. The team used to pay our travel, so we had no money. So at the end of the year, I'm like, I'm a chicken speaking to people. I said, Eddie, well, let's go talk to Steve. Yeah. You talk. So we sit down, and Steve's sitting at his desk at the shop, and we're like, hey, Steve, we want to speak to you. He's like, okay. Very intimidating all the time. And Eddie was like, you know,
the weather here.
You know, and then he started to like kind of backpedaling me. He says, what do you guys want? He's like, go to Florida. He says, okay, do whatever you want, but we won't pay you to go to the races from Florida. What we're going to do is whatever the ticket will cost from Columbus to Phoenix, we'll give you that, and you guys pay the difference, Miami-Phoenix. But then we went to Miami.
Yeah. Last question for you guys. So we're obviously celebrating this 20-year mark. You guys have not slowed down at all. There's no reason for you to stop what you're doing now. When the time comes where you say, I'm going to do something different than IndyCar, you both have shown amazing love and speed in sports cars. You think we might be celebrating 30 years?
Okay. I would love to. And actually, I would say even more. I think
he's going to have a wig by then, damn it. But that's okay.
I don't think we're anywhere near done with our IndyCar career. But if we had to choose, I mean, if... I don't think we're going to make that decision. To be honest, situations like this today, it's outside of our control. Somebody will tell us to retire before we actually say, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
Unless we see it coming and we'll beat the people Montoya style, you know? But like, you know, but my ideal world for me...
He just couldn't fit in the car anymore, let's be honest. Yeah, we're friends here.
I don't know.
And I'm one to say that, of course.
I would say the ideal world for me would be do as long as I can, but if I had to switch to sports car, I've done plenty of those races. I love it, and still do the Indy 500 for a few more years as well as one off. It'll be a perfect if I can do it full time.
I want to be.
He can't really talk about sports car stuff in the future, but regardless.
Actually, I would love to be his teammate eventually.
At the thing that we're not talking about.
At this point of our career to close, there will be like the story is already amazing.
Yeah.
Let alone if we had written it from the beginning, but if we ended our careers like that, would be amazing.
Montoya's got enough money; he doesn't need to do it. All right, we're gonna get him out.
That was Tony Kanaan and Elio Castroneves. We cut off just as Robin was saying some mean things about some of the older drivers who should have left before they did, but had their own team. Or were collecting big paychecks or had other reasons to stay on after they had surrendered their competitiveness inside a car. Anyways, hopefully you enjoyed it. I love those guys. And it's 20th anniversary. Hopefully we can get some time with them a little bit later in the year. Just do some more. And the reality is with 20 years of stories and even those that predate their arrival in America, just fun conversations. So anyways, hopefully we can do a part two here sometime soon. As I mentioned in the beginning, there's going to be a ton of content coming for the rest of the month of May. Spoke with Parnelli Jones, Michael Andretti, Mario Andretti, you name it. Whole bunch of cool stuff. A lot of retro stuff. We'll also have some fresh bits coming. A little bit of sports car stuff too to fill your ears. All right. Well, as always, I'm Marshall Pruitt. Thanks for listening.